Welcome everyone to another episode of the Comic Chronicle Podcast. I'm your host, Dakota Morgan, coming to you from Phoenix, Arizona. And of course, we are a Nerd with Balls production, MWB. Alrighty folks, Eric Burnham is on the show. Eric is a wonderful guy, truly hardworking writer to say the least here. It's hard to put in the words how much of a great guy he is. He has done so much work at the lore of Ghostbusters for IDW Insanity, and he's extended the universe, expanded upon what we love. We talk about the Ghostbusters Transformers crossover, which is an amazing series. You guys should check it out. So many things. We talk about creator-owned books. We also talk about the comic book industry in a whole. And so I want to say again, thanks, Eric, for coming on to the show. And make sure you guys go check out his work and give him a follow and whatnot, too, because he's definitely, definitely, definitely worth your time. So, of course, folks, I do want to say is, if you guys like the show, subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or comiccronicle.podbean.com, whatever you guys are listening on, it helps the show. What also helps the show if you guys promote it. Hashtag the Comic Chronicle Podcast on Twitter or Instagram, or hashtag Comic Chronicle. Either one works. Promote the show, share it to your friends, why not? We have so many people, so many inspirational stories, so many fun things on the show. I definitely want to be able to share that with more and more people, and we have so many listeners, but it also helps folks. I give you free shit. If you can help back, just help out a little bit. Thanks everyone for tuning in. And now my fun conversation with Eric. We are recording. Eric, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, how's it going?
Man, I'm kind of feeling old with the conversation we had right before the recording.
It's true. And I realized that, you know, my go-to is how's it going? So I felt like I got a deja vu thing just going on because I've said it twice within the span of 5 minutes, and now I feel, you know.
It's all good.
How's it going? Oh, yeah.
You feel really, like, iffy about it. You're like, wait a minute, it's not a comic panel, it's or at a con or anything like that. Hold on.
Yeah, I want to go back and edit it, because repetition, no, that doesn't work. No, redundancy.
I know, you said the wrong thing, and you're like, oh, shit, and it's like, oh, no.
It's true.
Man, I've had that recently. Have you ever had that happen to you, where you're like, and I don't pry for shit on the show and whatnot, this fair one on the podcast, I don't like prying. But have you ever had that moment where you're, like, talking to someone, maybe doing a panel or a show or something, and you're, like, you say something because you're so excited about it, and you're like, I'm going to get such an email later, it's going to suck bad.
Oh, gosh, yeah. No, that's happened to me a few times, and on a couple of podcasts, it's just like 10 minutes after it's done, I stop, I review in my head what I've said, and I email say, could we cut this part out because I will get yelled at. Maybe. But I mean, you know, I've gotten better. That was early on. I say I've gotten better. I'm trying to convince myself. I'm not entirely sure.
Well, I've done the bad boo-boo of saying it on my own show. Like, I've mentioned a book series that had, and I thought about it when I was talking to this person, because I asked, well, what are you working on? I told him a little bit about it, and I thought, after like a couple minutes, I'm like, oh shit, we have not even announced anything with this book series yet. Like, oh no.
Oh yeah, that can get you in all kinds of trouble.
Oh
yeah,
they were okay. I did talk, I got the emails. I was like, wait, we talked about it and such like that. I was like, yeah, it's fine. It was like, we got the clear. So I'm like, okay, well, I gotta post some stuff today. Oh no. Oh man, it's nuts. But you, Eric, you get to work on such huge properties. Like, I'm a little bit jealous, but it's also in the sense where you get to work with childhood, to say the least, in what you do and love.
100%, and I couldn't ask for a better job. I've gotten to play with every single toy in the sandbox that I loved when I was a kid. So it's been all wins for me. I've been really happy.
Yeah, it's some stuff that's just blew me out of the water, to say the least, especially recently, because if I recall right, you worked on a little thing called Ghostbusters and Transformers.
Oh, yeah, just finished that one up, and it was weird. I didn't expect to ever work on Transformers in any capacity.
Who does?
You know, exactly, but it's a really complicated mythology, and has only grown more complicated, the fans are very attached to their mythology, so I was happy that they let me just do what I was familiar with and tweak things to work for the story if necessary. So that made it a lot easier. But for the most part, it was weird. That was a weird one. Transformers was one of the franchises that I loved more as a kid. There was Ghostbusters, there was Transformers, there was Ninja Turtles. I got to work on all those. The only ones that I hadn't worked on that I was into as a kid, I think, is Masters of the Universe.
Oh,
but,
yeah. Give it time.
Yeah. But yeah, no, so it was just, it was a little surreal. And then, of course, you know, like I said, mixing and matching with Ghostbusters. Yeah, no, it is literally playing with the toys in the backyard, and you know, here's one, here's another from something else, but yes, they go together, and it's mind-blowing. It's fun that I get to do that. I'm babbling, but I mean, that's only because it kind of short-circuits my brain.
You're like, oh my god, they've put to life a little bit more than I could have with my toys in the backyard. Yeah. Like, we've all done that shit. Combined, like, Jurassic Park toys with Godzilla, and somehow that works. And it's like this whole, like, Transformers with the blob. Like, it's this whole thing. Like, we've all done it. But to actually see it come to life like that, and actually get paid for it, mind you, too. Yeah. Which is like, what?
It's true. It was also nice that they let me, you know, have a little fun with them and let them make jokes. I thought I was going to have to sneak that in at first because, you know, there's Ghostbusters, there's humor inherent to the property. I thought that I was going to have to, you know, get jokes with the Transformers in on the sly. And then Hasbro said, hey, could you make the bots funny too? We don't want the Ghostbusters to get all the jokes. And I was, yes, yes, I can do that.
Yeah, that's the email you want to hear.
It's true, you know, yeah, more leeway instead of less is always better.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, before we get any further, man, I do like hearing people's origin stories because I always am under the assumption, and this is just me in general, of your past matters and your past builds a better future. Man, how did you get started as a writer? Like, what was that thing that you're like, I'm looking at this now or reading this or playing with this? It's like, I want to create stories. I want to be able to create. And maybe you didn't think about comics at the time, but how did it sort of start for you as a writer, man?
Okay, well, there was a couple of different threads as to how it started as a writer, and one of them was, you know, in high school, I hear weird stories that friends of mine were saying that were actually kind of funny, and had watched a lot of independent movies, you know, Clerks or the Linkletter stuff, where that was right up the alley of that stuff, so catching my interest as a teenager. So I started writing scripts like that. Then, you know, finish high school, move to another town, have to, you know, don't have a job yet, not back in school, nothing like that. So, zooming around the internet, discovered organized fan fiction, did that for a little bit, just, you know, to write to an audience and get some feedback. Mm. And then I, you know, start working, and I was working for a radio station for a couple of years, and then got laid off from there and was back to ground zero not having anything to do. So I was back to the internet, noodling around and chatting with folks on message boards. This was before all the social media and stuff, and there was a group chat where we were complaining. Well, they were complaining. I was just sitting there listening about what they didn't like about comics. I don't like what DC is doing here. I don't like what Marvel is doing here. This isn't how I liked it when I was a kid. This isn't how, you know, this is diverse. You know, yeah, it's diverted from what I enjoyed. So finally someone says, can we do better? Mm. And we came together and decided to try to do better. We put together an anthology that turned into a small creator-owned company for a couple of years. And that's where I did my first comic in that first anthology, the Shooting Star Comics anthology. Mm. Which, when Shooting Star became a small company, we published Children of the Grave, which was Tom Waltz's first comic book. And IDW liked Children of the Grave, wanted to publish it as a collection, as a graphic novel. And that got Tom talking to them, and eventually he started freelance editing and then full-time editing for IDW. He got put onto the Gene Simmons books and asked me if I wanted to pitch for the anthology, the House of Horrors anthology. Mm-hmm. So I did. I pitched a couple of stories. He liked one. I did that story. And then, you know, I said, can I do something else? Do you have anything else you need pitches for? And he had a toy tie-in, which was kind of like a Pokemon kind of a thing. It was here for one Christmas and then gone, called Nanovore. Ooh. I did that. And then it was, he sends me an email, says, do you like A-Team? Yes, I do. Well, we need something turned around really fast, so I did a couple issues of an A-Team comic. Wow. And then after that, it was while I was doing that, I heard that he had gotten Ghostbusters. I was really interested in doing something for that, and he let me pitch a couple of things. And they were in the middle of their year-long holiday one-shot thing that they were doing quarterly. Mm. And after that, they decided to do the Infestation crossover, non-crossover, where they just put zombies in four of the big IDW properties. And the zombies were crossed over. It was a theme crossover, not a character crossover. And he asked me if I would write the Ghostbusters one for that, if it would be interested. Yes, I was.
Yeah.
So I got to do that. And I thought that was going to be my only shot at Ghostbusters, but it got received really well. And he asked for an ongoing pitch. And that's how I rolled into the ongoing, and everything else has come from that.
Jesus, you just, like, you started, and you just kept going. It's a huge domino effect, which people sometimes, and it's like you started small. Like, I mean, I work for an indie publication right now, and it's GVS Comics. And you never know what's going to happen. Like, you never know. And
oh, no.
I say it all the time in filmmaking, too. Like, as an actor, as a set designer and builder, as a writer, a director, you never know what's going to come down your door, like, once you do one project.
It's true, and you don't know what about what you're doing is going to attract the interest of, well, who. Yeah. The stuff that I was doing, the little 8-page shorts that I was doing in the anthology, Tom Waltz got a kick out of them. If he hadn't got a kick out of them, I wouldn't have been invited to pitch anything, and I wouldn't have, you know, started down the trail towards where I am now. It all just, you know, happened to be that he got a kick out of the sense of humor that were on those pages, and you never know how that's going to, who's going to like what. So it's all kind of a neat mystery.
Is it, like, people often, people especially in our business, especially as comic book people, as writers or artists or such like that, we tend to often think, oh, no one's reading them, or oh, no one's doing this, like, oh, it's going to go nowhere. And people in film who listen, because there's a bunch of them too, it's always, you have to keep your head up. You have to do it. Like, I think it's tough and tough. It's so tough these days, especially with the social media, especially with everything else, to be able to be like, keep your head up above the ground and above the crap. Because you see, like, oh, everyone else is succeeding, but maybe you're not at the time, and you think, oh, I'm never going to succeed again. That's bullshit. Throw it out the window. That's stupid. Because you will. It just takes more time sometimes.
Oh, yeah. No, it's really hard. Well, you know, everybody gets their tunnel vision, and it's hard to see. Well, yeah, social media is a big problem for that. It's hard to see, you know, where your next victory is going to come from when it just seems like a hit parade from everybody else. Because, of course, you're going to talk about your successes, and you know, all these successes from all corners kind of seems like everybody's winning when you're not, and you know, that's not the case. It's you know, it's a slanted view, but it's weird, because I mean, everybody is actually just sitting in their little corner of a room working. So, you know, it's hard to see, you know, it's hard to gauge progress until, you know, you have a big win, and then you start back at, you know, the beginning. So.
Oh yeah, and someone told me the other day, and it was someone at my day job, as I got to pay bills sometimes. Believe it or not, it's nice to be able to eat, day at least. And someone said, oh, you're an artist. I'm like, yeah, in a sense. Yeah, it's like, I don't draw. I want to clarify here. I don't like to take that title too much. And they said, well, like, you know, it's like, well, how do you do it? And I'm like, well, I do this and this and this. I said, well, you're doing the right thing, because you have to, as an artist, you have to take every win. You have to make sure you take it and acknowledge it and love it and learn from it and then move on to the next. So you have, because you're never going to get always a win. And I think people often realize that you're going to lose sometimes. Like, friends of mine who are actors, I think they're more chronically depressed than I can be sometimes, because it's just like, it's a 99% loss, you know? It's like, and in comics, I don't know if you've experienced it yet or not, like, there's some stuff, I pitch sometimes to companies, and it doesn't really work out too well, or, like, maybe I get denied a pitch, or we try to do something, and it gets denied. It's like, cool, but you just, and then you accept what you got, and you keep moving with it, and you make that thing better and better and better.
Oh, yeah. No, you get more no's than yes's in any kind of creative endeavor where you're going to someone else. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's been hard to build up the thicker skin. But at least, you know, I mean, I know there's no malice behind a no. Sometimes it's just as simple as that doesn't work with this other thing over here that you do not know anything about. Mm-hmm. Or that doesn't work with what the marketing department is interested in right now, which you don't know anything about. And they don't tell you. They just say, nope, can't use it right now. And, you know, I mean, I've seen enough behind the curtain that I can at least remind myself that these things are factors. Like I said, the things that you don't know about affecting it. Hmm. And that makes it easier, as opposed to, well, they don't like me, I'm never going to bother them again.
So Yeah, that's it. You're like, oh, I'm a terrible human being. I'm trash. Mm-hmm. Goodbye. Like, oh wait, no.
and that might have been my go-to before I started, finding out about all there was to know about the business, because there's always more that I don't know. Oh, yeah. And I'm still learning little arcane bits of how things are put together behind the scenes. It's enlightening, at least. It helps keep me sane.
Yeah. It's best to learn and not get your head in the corner and just stuck in there sort of thing. Because, you know, once you do that, you're creatively shooting yourself in the foot. I always think of, like, you got to keep your eyes open. You got to keep learning about what you're doing, the business, whatever it may be. You got to keep learning about it. Like, writing 4 books for me has been such and 2 published right now. The 3rd one, all this stuff we were talking about earlier. But so all this stuff happened with that, like learning the curves, learning the social media, learning what it's like being in the comic book industry, doing this sort of stuff here, has been a whole new experience this year with that. And it's one of those where do you take it and put it in other aspects of life? Like, yeah, you have to learn. If you don't learn, like if I didn't learn everything I needed to just to start, I would have been hosed from the beginning and could have just signed, okay, signed right here, death of your career, goodbye, over with. So it's one of those weird things. It's sometimes a lot more tougher to be a creative than people give her credit for.
Oh, anything freelance is a nightmarish juggling act.
That's so true.
Yeah. So, I mean, had I known everything at the start, I wonder if I would have, gone into freelancing. if I'd known everything from go, I mean, I'm happy with it. It was bit by bit, step by step onto the trail, as opposed to, just a leap. But I'm happy with it. But there's always something, and usually it involves what tax rule? Oh. No, I mean stuff like that.
Yeah,
these are the things that get me. It's not the work itself; it's everything that goes around about it being a business. So that's the stuff that I hate learning.
It's like why? But so I kind of getting on it a little bit more too, man. Is what do you bring as like a fellow comic book writer? What do you bring to a story? What do you think is those things where you're like, okay, I got to bring this, because you work on such big fucking creative properties. I mean, hell, you worked on Spider-Man, to say the least, too.
I did, and the thing that I try to bring is just a recognizable voice. When people are reading Ghostbusters, I want them to be able to hear those voices in their head and not be distracted by, no, wait, that doesn't sound right. It's a thing where the wrong word choice can stand out. I was watching, for the first time in many years, I was watching the other day, The Phantom Menace. And I just, I said, I haven't watched it in 20 years. I'll see if it holds up. And I'm like, this isn't so bad. Wait a minute. That word made absolutely no sense for him to say. It's out of character. What is going on here? And that took me out of the movie for a couple of minutes. Mm. It's a small thing. It's not a major criticism, but I mean, this is Anakin saying good fortune instead of good luck. That didn't make any sense to me.
No.
It's little things like that. And I mean, so that's the kind of thing that I pay attention to when I'm writing. It's the voice is the big thing, and that's what I try to bring to stuff, and that's why I think I've had success with licensed properties that people are familiar with, because the voices are clear, and that's what I'm holding on to. It'll be a little trickier if I do something that that has a blank slate that people aren't already familiar with.
Yeah,
but it served me well in this other thing.
I dig it. I love it. So it's almost like relatability. I can't speak. It's coffee. Relatability. Like, you want that. If you don't have that, how are people going to want to bond with? How are people going to want to be with it and whatnot, too? Like, discovering that's been one thing, too, of, holy shit, people want to bond with your characters. And when they do, it's like, this is nuts. Even if they're, like, not your creative owned, they're licensed properties such as Ghostbusters and such. And it'd be like, oh, I did that. People are like, oh, I love when this happened, this and this and this. It's like that feeling when someone tells you, this is amazing, right? And it's like, you're doing a good job. And to find that voice is sometimes tough, I think, though,
It is a little bit, but like you were just saying, it's always worth it when you see how much it can mean to somebody. Early on, I got an email. Somebody it was a fan email. They were having a tough day. They were waiting in the hospital for I think It was either a sick spouse or a sick kid. I can't remember which one it is off the top of my head. But they said they were reading the books, and it was, you know, the jokes were cheering them up while they were getting through it. I mean, it wasn't life threatening, but it was still, you know, you're in the hospital. So I mean, that kind of thing, just a little brightening to somebody's day. That meant an awful lot to me as I'm sitting there going, you know, in the middle of another script going, does this even matter? Does anybody care? Oh, you know, you get that email out of the blue. It's just like, well, thank you, universe. I appreciate that.
Yeah. That little nudge to be like, keep going, Eric. It's worth it. Like, it's, you never know what it's going to come to either. Like, there's one of the books I do that's published right now I can talk about is Giant Monsters in Vietnam War. It sounds like the most sci-fi movie you can ever get. Sci-fi, the rights are available if you want it. But people are like, this is amazing. This is my, you brought a piece of my childhood I never knew I wanted. I'm like, what? And it's like all this sort of thing. Like, insanity to me sometimes. I love it. I love the fan mail. And I think fan mail is our version as a creative, especially writers, is our drug. Because we're like, okay, we need another fix. Like, oh, this is amazing. I have another bout of energy to keep going. Let's finish this script. Let's just keep going.
Like, oh, yeah.
It's weird. It's nuts to me. It's just this whole world I've been entering. Like, these thousands of people coming in. And especially you with Ghostbusters, man. How has it been tackling that with fans? Like, with a licensed property and such. How is it? Like, is it tough? Is it stressful? Is it fun? Like, it's got to be fun, but
It's fun. It's, yeah. Ghostbusters has never been stressful for me. I've never had any issues. And there have been no major notes on it either since I started, which is amazing and lucky, because, you know, I mean everything else I'll get a note, you know, here or there, but I mean Ghostbusters, for the most part, it's been minor things, and I mean half of them have been on the art side, so they're not towards me anyway. But I mean, it's in this case, it was, that one is that one and my own sensibilities sync up so well that It's fine. and you know, for the most part, the fans have been into it. The only weirdness were when we did the crossovers with the 2016 characters, and then you had the fans of the original movie who didn't want to see the new characters, and you had fans of the new movie who didn't want to see the original characters. They wanted the chocolate and the peanut butter kept separate, basically. And you know, I mean, and that was the only grousing, but at the end of the day, most of them were still pretty happy with the crossover. The ones that weren't, you know, you're not going to please them anyway. So, I mean, they'll find something else to complain about, basically. But, I mean, for the most part, I have had nothing but the best interactions have come out of my work on that book. I've had I've made good friends because of it. I've gone to a couple of weddings because
what?
Because you know, it's just I became friends with some people, and then I get a wedding invitation. It's you know, little things like that. And I mean, I just, some of the best friends I've ever had have come out of working on this book directly and indirectly. You know, whether it be someone I worked with or someone who's just read the book. And we met and talked over it and then segued on to other things. And, you know, I've had some of the best experiences. I had my fun little dream of zooming around the Sony lot on a golf cart because of this. And, you know, just, I mean, little things. It's all come from my work on this. And I am 100% grateful. So nothing, whatever minutely bad, you know, somebody complaining about something they didn't like in a tweet that I can ignore and mute versus all of the good. You know, I mean, it's a major net positive.
Oh, God, yeah. And it's, you're such ingrained into the lore that your name is known by so many people who, like, Ghostbusters. Like, oh, Ghostbusters comics? Oh, Eric. It's like, you're so ingrained into it, and it's like, and it doesn't phase that much either. It's like, awesome. It's just awesome to be able to get that thing of, I get to be a part of my childhood, and because my childhood has been a part of me, but to be able to say, I'm a part of my childhood is something people dream of. And to be able to do that, man, I mean, shit, zipping around on the Sony lot, who gets to do that these days, especially in our business?
Fun. Well, I mean, you know, but I mean, the thing that keeps me, the grounded part of it all is that, I mean, I don't see in a day-to-day, I even half the time at conventions, the max part of it, mostly that comes through, you know, email and tweets. Yeah. But where I live, there is such a little interest in pop culture. If I tell somebody I'm a writer, they'll look at me with sympathy and say, don't worry, Christmas is coming up. Walmart is hiring.
Holy shit.
So it'll be fine. It'll be okay.
Did they offer you a pack of ramen noodles while they're at it too? What the hell?
And they might. No, that's, I mean, and that's, and I live in a rural area, and that's the kind of thing it is. So, I mean, it's just massive positives come through the computer screen and the phone, and then, you know, brought down to earth, when I go out, go out into the community. Yeah. But, no, it's all good. Like I said, it's been a net positive. The self-deprecating joke aside, it's been a net positive. So, I mean, I don't want to let my head get too big about it, because, you know, and then when it'll end, I'll get more depressed. So I just, I'm trying to keep an even keel. I'm just happy to be here and still having fun, and hope it doesn't end anytime soon.
Hey folks, Dakota here with a little bit of an ad break for you guys today. Do you guys like reading comics? Obviously, if you listen to the show, you do. What the fuck am I talking about? Then you guys, if you're in Arizona, which a good majority of the fan base is, shout out to the ones in Canada though, you guys can go to Drawn to Comics in Glendale, Arizona, located at 5801 West Glendale Avenue in Glendale, Arizona. I gotta say, folks, I've been going here for a long time now. I've been to a few different comic book stores in Arizona in my 6 years of living here so far, and this may change due to the recording nature, but whatever. So I love going to Drawn to Comics. I really do. Ken, who runs it, is amazing, fucking laid-back dude. He's a wonderful guy. He's been on the show, ladies and gentlemen, before. And it's a really fun place to pick up the book. So Drawn to Comics in Glendale, Arizona. Get yourself a box, you know. Go in, maybe just check it out. It's a fun place to escape into. His work, all the workers there are fucking wonderful folks. They really are. It's just like family at this point, at least for me. And it's a fun world to go into. There's collectibles there. There's toys. There's comics. You know, and you just get your box and reserve some books and whatnot. We've had people on the show who've written and drawn comics, you know. Go in and pick up their work, folks. Jesus Christ. It ain't that difficult. So go to Drawn the Comics in Glendale, Arizona, folks. You guys can check them out also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thanks, everyone. Now back to the show. You have the best positive guy I've... You're like, the positivity, man, is so... I dig it so much because it's rare to find. It really is. Like, you find the positivity of, like, I don't want to let it get to my head. Like, some people, you know, not too many people I've had on the show, but there's some people that I've talked to and such that just like, I am this guy. I've worked on such and such. And it's like, no, you're still human. It's like, but you don't, it's like, yeah, but you still got to do work. And what are you going to do when it ends? Like, oh, shit. But you're like, I'm still going for it. I mean, shit, how long have you been working in the Ghostbusters franchise at the moment?
The first thing that I did was March of 2011.
So
it's been a bit, and like I said, I'm hoping, just my own personal goal, I'm hoping to make it to 2021 at the very least before they shuffle me away, just so I can say I got a decade in.
I am knocking on wood.
Yeah, thank you. So am I. It is. I've said this a lot. It's been the best job I've ever had, my favorite job, and I really enjoy the different ways that I get to do it. The one that I just started working on now is, a couple of months ago, we're doing a year one, which, is just, you know, little one shots that were stuck in between scenes of the movie. So Winston, I've seen shit that'll turn you white. What did he see? All we saw him do was drive around and fight Gozer. So we're going to throw his first bust, as a Ghostbuster into a comic. We're going to, yes, we're going to do that, and the other one, which will come up in previews here in a couple of days, issue two. The crux of the miniseries is the Ghostbusters have they've just beaten the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, so a small publisher wants to do a quick, you know, get it to market biography, you know, something that you would read on a plane, kind of a thing. They want to get that done. So an author is doing interviews with the Ghostbusters. And in the second issue, the author, she's asking Ray, doing my research, the thing about the ghost in the library that you first guys got, did you ever go back? And so in the second issue, we're going to have them go back and go after the librarian, which, you know, they did that a little bit in the game, but we're going about it a different way. So these are the fun things that I get to do now, which, going back to the very beginning as opposed to, you know, mining forward, which is what we had been doing with the series. Mm-hmm. And it's all a blast. And I've seen Dan Schoening has just turned in the layouts for issue two, and they're going to blow some minds. It's some crazy stuff he's drawn in there.
Crap. This is... my producer, Jesse Lozano, for the Nerdballs, that helps run the shows and stuff like that, he's a huge Ghostbusters fan. And he's probably listening right now when his episode comes out, and he's probably shedding a tear of joy. Because I'm almost like, this is beautiful. Like, this is the Netflix show we want. Like, what the hell?
Oh, man. That would be a blast to work on. But no, it's just, it's you know, we keep finding other ways to have fun with it. And that's just, that's giddy to mine this stuff. And, you know, hopefully the movie keeps the interest high. And, you know, we get to keep doing this stuff. I've got some weird pitches into IDW, hopefully, that will see the light of day.
Now, I'll be honest, I haven't read all the books because this is so much to try to catch up on.
Who can? There's, I mean, you know, people are busy. There was a conversation on Twitter just the other day that it's just like, okay, we're all the people in comics, they know the other people in comics. Everybody should know we're so busy making comics, we can't read everything.
It's so true.
We can't read the stuff that our friends are making, let alone all the good stuff that we know about. So, I mean, you know, you can't take offense at that.
Okay.
But when you get around to this in 3 or 4 years...
Oh,
you enjoy it. No, it's you know, I mean, yeah, it's tough to keep up. I you know, I have a backlog. I have about a year's backlog just of that my friends have worked on, and again, that's not counting all the other great stuff that's out there. So when people say, "So, what did you think of blank?" I'm like, "Aha! Well, you know, it's coming up soon. I can't wait to get a hold of it."
Nervously and sips coffee. Oh,
it's you know, I mean, you can't. There's just no way to take offense of, I haven't gotten around to it yet. Everybody's busy.
It's true. But it's so true. But I think I wanted to tell you is, and I wanted to ask, because when I was Googling some of the other covers and whatnot and pictures and whatnot for promotional art, I was looking at them like, the one that sold me, and tell me if you're looking at this one, it was an art piece. It was of the sign that's like the Ghostbusters sign. It was their logo. It was the sign hanging outside the firehouse. And on top of it was this jack-o'-lantern vine-esque... What was
it? That was one of the things we do in the comic is we take ghosts from the real Ghostbusters cartoon, and we make more movie-like versions of them. So I mean, the ghost Sam Haines, Awain, from the cartoon, he was just, okay, I'm the spirit of Halloween and I'm going to freeze time, and that was all there was to him. So we, you know, and that's fine for a 20-minute cartoon. We tried to make it more of what if this ghost had appeared in the movies, you know, what might that feel have been? So Dan does a design that might feel more like it would be at home in the movies, and then I try to come up with something a little bit more less 20-minute cartoon and more, you know, 2-hour movie, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But I mean, that one was a lot of fun, and I think that it worked.
Oh, I loved it. I'm like, it hooked me. I was like, oh my god, this is definitely the binge.
Oh, yeah, and that particular cover just looked really cool.
Oh,
and
wow.
more than just the image, just the thing that surprised me. This is just, you know, technical nerdery. When I got my comps, I looked. I said, "There's spot cloth on this. This looks amazing." I'm, you know, switching it in the light. Look at it. He's shiny. This is awesome. And it's a stupid bit of geekery over the printing process, but it looked really cool.
That's a fact. It matters. Like, I said the same shit over a cover for a new series coming out, and it was all shiny and bright and stuff like in like 3D animated style look. I was like, oh my god, this is awesome.
It jumps out. It helps it jump out, and that's the whole point. But yeah, no, it's it was a popular one. That one was the one we did that to work as a lead into a crossover that we did last year with all the Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah,
with everything. So I mean, you know, I mean, all the cartoons and all the movies and everything, and you know, and you know, then I had to steel myself for the tweets. But what about the gorilla? They're the Ghostbusters too. No, it's IP rights. That doesn't go away.
Yeah, like, shut up.
You know, it's like, this is the 14th time I've heard this joke in the last hour. It's not anymore.
But no,
it was we just did a big ridiculous crossover, just mixing everybody up, and that's, like I said, that was the lead into that, and that was more fun. So I mean, you know, it's been cool.
Oh, this is gonna sound like, I know you get asked all the time weird questions like this. This is like the nerd in me asking, what is your favorite ghost to write in all your years working on this series?
Oh, geez. The favorite ghost. Yes. Okay. Well, you know, the one that seemed to strike a chord was one that was made up to fill space. there was in the first arc of the series, I was realizing that I needed I needed another, just separate from the main narrative. I needed a bust, and I was sitting at a taco place eating a taco, noodling around trying to come up with something, and I came up with the ghost of an orphanage headmistress, called her Ellen Gold. Mm-hmm. And this one is, you know, she appears, the area around her turns into the orphanage, and she throws, you know, the ghosts of dead orphans people and all this. It sounds a lot more macabre now that I'm putting it into words, but it looks fun on the
it
page.
Sounds metal as hell.
So I mean, this was the one that has popped up as you know, people remember. She goes, it's creepy enough to be creepy, you know, the lightning strikes outside, you know, and then there are all the red eyes, and then, you know, the lightning stops and the room is clear, you know, these kind of things. It's something that stuck with people early, and that they still remember. We brought the ghost back a couple of times. The real fun was that it made it into last year they had the AR game, the Ghostbusters World, on the phone. Character made it into that, and that was cool to see. Yeah. So a bunch of our characters made it into that game, and that was some kind of fun little thing to see.
Oh, that's brought it to life. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, you know, I think it's well deserved. I know the movie's done filming and whatnot right now too. I have to say, there was definitely no goddamn way in hell you can talk about it if it is true. I would love to see some of your guys' ghosts appear in the movie.
I mean, if they did, it would certainly be a surprise to us. Yeah. Because, you know, I mean, the movie is its own beast, and we don't get to hear anything unless we need to know for some reason. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I know very little. I was told a few things so that I didn't contradict the movie when I was working on the year one stuff.
Of course.
I don't know. I don't know what the plot is, because, I mean, well, you know, the plot can change as the movie is filming and as the movie is edited and, you know, reshoots and all this stuff, improv, whatever. So I have very little knowledge of what's going on, and if something we came up with in any way popped up on the screen, I would lose it, and, you know, people would turn and they would look at me and who cares, what, you know, why are you so excited, this is just a ghost, or, you know, whatever. But I'm hoping, you know, I'm hoping at some point that there's another cartoon or a live action TV show or a movie sequel or something, you know, a AAA video game where some more of the stuff we've done pops out there, because it's just really cool to see it come to life in other mediums.
It makes sense too. It's like, use the stuff that's already, instead of being like taking 20 days to figure out a design and then like, okay, how are we gonna do this? Like, you have a plethora of shit already that you guys have already made. So I think it's like, because obviously we're gonna see more than one ghost, I would hope. Mm-hmm. But if you can do an Easter egg sort of thing, I know that happens to some creators who I've had on the show. It's like they had no idea, and then it popped up on screen in the back somewhere, or like it was like a little montage thing and stuff, and their creation was there. Like, I really am crossing fingers to that. Anyone who listens who may have any pull with the movie or knows anybody, let Eric live his dreams. Come on.
Yeah, give me some stuff. No, it would be, like I said, it would be cool to see. Yeah. You know, it'd be cooler to be brought into work on this stuff, but it would still be cool to see.
Oh, God, yeah. Now, I'm curious, though, man, as a writer and whatnot, too, what future... I know I don't want you to get in trouble or anything like that, but, like, and I don't want you to come out there and be like, oh, I don't want to work on Ghostbusters anymore, but, like, do you have anything maybe you're working on or want to work on that's your own creative ideas? Because I'd love to see your work as, like, your own creative comic.
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, you know, that's where I started. I started with creator-owned stuff, and there have been a couple of ideas, and usually the stumbling blocks have been, there's only so much time in the day to work versus everything else in life. Mm-hmm. So if I have, whether, you know, by, you know, design or fluke, if I have X amount of work and I can't work on, you know, something for myself, that stands in the way a couple of times. The fact that it's you know, you have to, there has to be art done. Either I would have to do it, or I would have to pay somebody else to do it. And you know, sometimes there's a budget for that, and sometimes there isn't. And you know, when there's the budget, is sometimes people I want to work on it aren't available.
Yeah.
The budget goes away for whatever reason. You know, hello, you know, accident of life. Then you know, I mean, that pushes things back. And you know, I mean, if I were to draw it myself, which I'm barely competent enough in some things, but it takes a lot longer than it does to write, obviously. Yeah. So, I mean, so that's, you know, I mean, that pushes off whether I have the block of time to do any of that. And it's just all, it's all a thing. So yes, there are things that I want to do. I'm noodling around, with prose on my, which I haven't done in years, but I'm noodling around with prose on my Patreon just for, you know, to play around with that. Mm-hmm. Some of the first things I got paid for was screenwriting. I'd love to get back to that at some point. But yes, I do have creator of comic stuff that I am working on. Two different things. Just, I mean, slowly, a page here or a panel there, writing as I can get up. One of them is, if I was trying to come up with a genre, I would say mix folklore, mm-hmm. and Elmore Leonard. And then put it in my backyard, which is almost like American Gods, but without the gods. So yeah, American Gods without the gods. That's what it is.
Sounds awesome,
and,
huh?
Yeah. And then the other thing that I'm working on is somebody was joking around with me about the mashup of two properties. You know, do a crossover between these two. I'm like, well, that would never work in real life, but I bet you I could take the elements and weave them into something. And then I started thinking, I started writing, and I came up with a, you know, I had to pull over my car to dictate a bunch of stuff into my phone because I had a bunch of ideas. So that's the other thing I'm working on, and I'll save the surprise for what two things, you know, it's like this plus this. I'll save the surprise for that in case it ever actually happens and comes out. So I don't have people asking, well, what about the thing that you were talking about? Oh, yes, that. It's never going to happen. Anyway, so I mean, those are the two things that I am working on and trying to pull together, and hopefully, you know, hopefully they will, because I have places that I can pitch them now if I got them to a certain point. So,
oh,
you know,
yeah. It's not like you don't have pull, Eric.
You know, I'm always going to assume that I have less than I do. It's safer for everybody that way.
That's, it's like, what happened? Eric is working on 12 books at once. Is he alive? Yeah. I don't know.
that sounds about right. That's my Midwestern work ethic right there. That's you know, I would be happy with that.
Same. Oh my God, you have no idea. Like, as a guy, I live in Phoenix, Arizona right now. I say it in the intro of the show, so it's fine. But I used to grow up. I grew up for 16 years, most of my life in Illinois, outside in the suburbs, a little bit. And so, it definitely the Midwestern thing of like, they're like, "How do you work this much?" I'm like, well, us Midwesterns got to work hard, you see.
It's really, it's in the DNA. And
yeah,
I did live in Arizona for a while. And I remember I couldn't deal with the heat. I never wanted to do anything. It was just like, my breath's on fire. I'm going to lay down.
You take a shower and you're like, oh, coma sounds really nice right now.
It's true. Well, as I say, I lived down there twice. The second time I lived in Casa Grande.
Oh, shit.
And I remember there was a stupid game that the neighborhoods could play. It's like, it's noon. Let's run across the street barefoot.
Wait, what?
Yeah, it was not a smart game.
Oh, my God.
So yeah, you know, like, so there people are going, well, what's wrong with that? Well, it was 110 degrees. That's what was wrong with
that. That sounds like heat. Everyone got heat stroke, and they banded together. Like, no.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know, the stupidity of youth. I'm not entirely sure you could still get away with that game. I think it's actually gotten hotter since I've lived there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like illegal to walk your dogs on the. It's so hot in the summertime.
Oh,
without
my goodness.
Foots, like foot. I call them booties, but like the little, like the foot shoes and whatnot. It's insane. Like, my day job, I work at a zoo that makes a little more when I, if need be, some days a week. Let me tell you, man, you see this stuff all the time where people are like, oh, it's fine. And they walk over, they're like, oh, kids don't need to walk out. And they walk, kids walking barefoot when it's in the summertime,
yeah.
115, 125 on the ground. And their kids' feet get like 30 degree burns and shit. Like, you're like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm. No, it's. Yeah, no, that's give me a little shiver just thinking about it. Of course, on the other hand, where I live now, it's just like, well, I'm looking forward to 40 degrees below zero this winter.
Oh, God.
So, you know, I mean, it's one or the other at this point. But but back to it. The work ethic is, I do like to keep busy. There was a couple of months this year where I was completely caught up on projects, and I had things that I was supposed to start working on, but I was waiting on green lights. Mm. And so I didn't, for a couple of months, I just didn't have anything to do, and it was driving me out of my mind. That's when I started the creative role stuff. I started plotting away on those. Because I, like I said, I was bored, and it just drove me up a tree outside of, well, I mean, you know, I had convention travel to do and some family things and that kept me busy for
a day
for some blocks of time. It just drives me mad when I don't have anything to do.
It does. It's I 100% with you, because you know you're always creating, you're always working and you're creating, you know. That's why I do film and comics, because at least both keep me busy. But then there's that rare time where you have that, like, that time where you're down or you're caught up or you don't need to work on something for a little bit, at least like a week or two. You know, those couple of days, you're just like, I now know why Joker went insane. This is nuts. It's like,
it's true.
You're like, you don't know what to do. So you start creating, you start making, like, and if something, and if someone's like, hey, do you want to go out for coffee? Yes.
Yeah. Well, in this case, I was starting to get on my friend's nerves. I was sending out the text, would you like to go out for coffee, or, you know, you want to grab lunch or something like that, or just, you know, my farther away friends just texting, and they're like, don't you have anything to do? No, that's the problem. I don't have anything to do. I mean the creator owned stuff is it is nice to work on, but unless it has a tangible deadline from somebody else, it can be hard for me to psych up the will to do it. As opposed to something like, well, this needs to be done, people are counting on me, they'll be, you know, somebody won't have their job to do with the time they need to do it if I don't get this done, or, yeah, you know, what have you. But I mean, yeah, no, so it's just, I, you know, a couple of months of madness and spinning my tail, and then all of a sudden I'm back to working on three books and couldn't be happier, so this is exciting.
Yeah, oh yeah, like, you're just, but I love it, man. I love it, I love it, I love it, because you are that hard worker that I think probably won't retire, but we're also freelancers, so I don't think we could, but.
No, freelancers does not get to retire, no.
No, we don't. We do not. But you get to still do these things, and you still work hard all the time. Like, in 5 years from now, what is it? What are you going to be putting out, Eric? I got no idea. I don't know if you got any idea, but it's like, what is it going to be? Who knows?
Yeah. But you know, hopefully I will be putting things out. That would be, you know, yeah, they, you know, barring like the crumbling of society, or, you know, a comet strike or something like that, I hope to still, that people will still find interest in the stuff that I do enough, mm-hmm, to pay me to do it and pay to read it, you know, or watch it or listen to it, you know, any of that kind of stuff. That would be ideal. You know, that is, it's a small goal, but it's the goal that I have.
Exactly. Hey folks at home, this is your host Dakota here with a little bit of an ad break. Do you guys like the Comic Chronicle podcast, and do you like getting in-depth interviews with people of, moreover, not interviews, but conversations with people in the businesses? Well, guess what? If you love film and television, go check out the Film World podcast that I host on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and filmworld.podbean.com, because I get to talk to people all over from the business of film and TV, of actors, creature actors, writers, directors, cinematographers, all these people, VFX artists, hell, they all come onto the show. We give in-depth conversations about what they do. People from Jurassic World, Planet of the Apes, Transformers, Godzilla, numerous times, you know, and voice actors. And we give all these in-depth conversations with you guys from all sorts of ranges of different things on the Film World podcast. So if you guys like the Comic Chronicle podcast, you'll probably like Film World. Thanks everyone for tuning in. Hopefully you guys are enjoying the show. And now back to the conversation at hand. And I honestly, like, kind of thinking 5 years from now, because just today as this recording, Disney Plus just dropped. And so I don't mind giving dates of recordings out. But we are looking at it now, and I have not worked for, like, IDW, Image, DC, or Marvel yet. I've done a bunch of books, one up, creative-owned series. But between you and I think in 5 years, at least I'm hoping my career goes this way, at least you will. You're going to write a book for a streaming service. I really, like, it's going to be digital only. Because DC Universe, they have their own comics on there you can get. Marvel can do the same thing.
That's the thing. I know that folks have talked about, the one big idea was doing like a Netflix for comics. Mm-hmm. And you know, Comixology has a thing that is sort of like that. I think more, I've heard a couple of different people discuss something like that will be a different kind of a streaming service, you know, something that is more akin maybe to Spotify. Or a Hulu, you know, to look at another way is you can get all this stuff, and it you know, maybe it'll have a subscription buy-in, and maybe it won't. Maybe it'll have ads that you can't skip, or maybe it won't. But I think that some kind of service for reading material will come along that matches the movies and the TV and the music, wherein you have the ability to get a large lion's share of stuff.
Yeah.
But you know, yeah, you got to deal with some ads, or you know, maybe it's you know, the publishers will come up with their own little, you know, for $5 a month, and you can get everything, you know, that kind of a thing. Who knows? There's innovation to be had in the tech space that books has not gotten around to yet. So I mean, that'll be real exciting to see, and hopefully it'll increase, you know,
like workload,
readership and workload and income and interest and all that stuff. I mean, that's the goal. That's the ideal.
Yeah, it's I don't want to give people the wrong impression here. I am a big guy on getting print books. I love my print books. I love going to the store. Shout out to you, Drawing the Comics. I love going there. I love the people, the feel, everything like that. But there is that day coming up now with everything going on. It's like, oh, shit. But, you know, in the post, because Tom Taylor, I believe it was Tom Taylor and a few artists on the series, Injustice, from the video game series from DC, that was digital only. Look how much that took off. I think that was the seed of the tree that was planted for that future that you just mentioned, that you just talked about.
Oh, yeah.
Because that so well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and the other thing to think about is where I live personally right now, if I wanted to go to a comic shop, it is a 1 to 2 hour drive one way.
Oh,
if I want to go to a bookstore, it's a 1 hour and change each way. I have used bookstores, but I don't have an actual bookstore with, you know, new books weekly. Mm. I don't have a comic book store. So, I mean, digital, if I want to get something timely without a long drive, then digital is the best way for me to do that. And I mean, there's a lot of folks for whom it's the best way to do that. I mean, there is still a lot of flyover country. So, you know, it becomes a little bit easier as far as comics go, I should say. Books, there are still more bookstores, thankfully, and growing, and I love that. But yeah, with comics, it's still a little harder because, the stores don't tend to, you don't tend to find them in rural areas, you know, just because the audience isn't there. Yeah. But you know, like I said, I'm hoping that more people can find them you know, the accessibility of the internet will hopefully help. That's been what people have been talking about since Comixology started, before Amazon bought it. Mm. So hopefully it'll circle back around to something that is easy for people to do and find it. You know, comics can kind of return to that mainstream prominence past just being, you know, the thing that you go to the movie to see.
Yeah. I'm with you. I think it's going to go back to what it was because it's kind of in a weird spot right now.
Mm-hmm.
At least as of this recording, who knows, people may listen in the future, but we do live in that world where it is mostly movies, but I think comics are never going to die. And people often talk to me like, oh, comic books, that's going to go all the way, and this is going to be all movies, TV shows. And I sit there and think, no. There's no, because you have parents who are giving it to kids. Kids, and we the digital thing world too, where the digital helps out so many people like yourself. And so you have that thing where comics are never going to die. They're never going to go away. You know, the medium's always going to stay. It may come and go. But, like, look from the 90s to the early 2000s. Like, it was pretty rough. Or the 80s to the 90s. It was a rough time. Like, fucking Marvel went bankrupt almost, if I remember right. And so, but look where they are now. So they're never going to die. They may change. They may change their form. They just may, like Buddhism, they're just going to be rebirthed. But they're always going to be around, and I think it's just that we're in a weird spot now where it's changing, but and nobody knows what it's going to be.
Well, I mean, the medium has been dying for 80 years. You know, people will, you know, it's going to be dead soon. And, you know, things come up, you know, things come up and switch the focus of the series for a while. You know, I mean, it bumped away from what was popular and moved to funny animals and moved to romance and moved to crime and then moved to westerns and moved to superheroes, which, you know, really kind of stuck. And now it's starting to slowly shift to other formats, other genres, other interests. And the big thing now, the thing that has surpassed superheroes, is middle grade, whether it's slice of life stuff that you see from Raina's books, or whether it is a goofy comedy like Dave Pilkey. Those things, I was reading the other day, every single book that Dave Pilkey comes out with, the Captain Underpants guy, you know, the Dog Man, is a 4 or 5 million print run for the first printing. Yeah. And it doesn't stop at one.
It has been going for how many years?
Exactly. So, I mean, this when you look at it that way, and of course, Raina, they had to reinstate the graphic novel list to the New York Times because she was number one, period, and they didn't want to put a graphic novel above, you know, all these important prose books. So, you know, when you're looking at that, when you look at stuff like that. So, the comics as a medium, it's fine. It's doing really well creatively, and you know, the industry you know, superhero comics, it might have to evolve. I don't know. And I do know everything has to evolve to stay relevant. But you know, I don't know how it will evolve yet, but I mean, it will. And you know, comic stores will adapt to the change, and you know, we'll see some interesting things happen.
You know, there's going to be a fan out there that's going to hear this conversation between you and I, and they're going to say, these guys are being biased because they write this stuff. And it's like, shit.
I mean,
we are speaking the truth.
Yeah, like, it's...
We're not holding back.
Yeah. There was a thing that I had read a while back, and this was in regards to a movie, but it really applies to a lot of things. And I wish I could remember where I read this, but the gist of it is a student asked a professor what the professor thought of a movie. Mm-hmm. And the professor says, I didn't like that movie. And the way the brain processes that is not, he said he didn't like the movie. The brain processes that is, I identify this movie. This movie is therefore part of me. He said he didn't like it. He doesn't like me. This is an attack.
Well, what?
The brain can't process between what it perceives as aggressive words, and that can, you know, boil down to something as simple as, I didn't like this thing that you really, really love, and a physical attack. Most people, it's very easy for them to just say, oh, well, you know, that's fine, they didn't like it, you know, big deal. But some people, it just, those wires connect, and it's just like, I am really angry at this person, I hate them, they attacked me, and I'm going to get them. Yeah. And so, I mean, and that, when you look at, I mean, you compress that all down to a shorthand, that explains a whole lot of angry tweets. Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, and that's, and I try to remember that whenever I see somebody, you know, mad about something. The Martin Scorsese Marvel thing is a really good example of this kind of thing popping up. Because you see how people have taken it so incredibly personally, and then so... Everything that is said that is not in line with their point of view is a personal attack. So the same thing will happen with any strong opinion. You know, people hold it near and dear, and they identify with it, and they're really strong into it. And somebody else comes along, and nope, that's not true. That's not right. Here's my thoughts. And then, you know,
there's,
if you're not careful, then yeah, it becomes of, you're attacking me, I must respond.
Yeah.
And it's not an attack, but, you know, I mean, it's just, the world moves so fast, we don't always slow down and realize that it's just, well, not an attack, basically. So, I mean, and that comes with anything, even as simple as, well, this is how comic books are going to be in the future. No, it's not!
No.
You know, I mean, that kind of thing. So, yeah. And it's just, you know, I mean, that's... And you know, now that I've said all that, I'm sure that I'm going to run across the article and find that I missed some important part of this and I misunderstood it the entire time. But it kind of tracks.
Yeah, it's, we never truly know. Like, I think I love that all. I really do. I think that onto it, though, is people always want to know what's in the future, but the biggest mind blower, and the people listening, brace yourselves for this shit. We never know what's going to happen. You don't know. You don't know what could happen in the future. Like, you don't know what could happen. I could happen 5 minutes after this recording, and I could win $1 million, or I get a phone call from, like, Warner Brothers saying you're Superboy. I don't know. Like, you never know what's going to happen here. You could try to predict it. You could, with everything you love, you can say, this is what's going to happen, right? I know, because I love it. Like, sure. You know how many times I've said that with a relationship? God, no. It's like, like, you just don't know.
It's true. Really, it's true. You can't know. And, you know, the only thing you can be sure of is that changes will occur at some point, mm-hmm. whether they're major or minor, you know, perceptible or not, there's going to be changes. And, I mean, some of the things that I have heard is that the industry is looking, the comics are looking at ways to shift back to, you know, stuff that kids will want, because that audience is ridiculous. They're insatiable, and mm-hmm. they, you know, if they find a book or an author that they like, then all of a sudden I need it all. Yeah. And so, I mean, that's as a business practice, that's what you want to go after. That's a big thing. But it doesn't necessarily serve the, but I want Batman to kill the Joker because it's not realistic if he doesn't. Well, I mean,
don't
we're
pull the
about
thread.
Realism here, you know what I mean? It's about well, from the Stark point of view, it's about making money telling stories. that's all there is. I mean, the realism really doesn't enter into it.
That's it. You can't pull the threads either. Like, and that's why I think, like, as you get older, you realize, like Star Wars, if you pull the thread, it all comes apart. You're shit out of luck. You can't. Like Ghostbusters, if you pull the thread, like you're out of luck. It's like Transformers. Mm-hmm. Don't pull it. Just leave it.
No, and see, the other thing that comes to mind with, you know, just an evolution of a property or, you know, doing things. I remember sitting in the theater watching a trailer for that first Michael Bay produced Ninja Turtle movie, and I saw two reactions happen at the exact same time that explains an awful lot of pop culture. And behind me, there's two guys about my age saying, "They ruined my childhood. This is terrible. I'm angry." 5 rows in front of me, there was this kid. "Dad, that looks so awesome. Can we go? I want to go." And, you know, I mean, there it is right there. That's what everything turns to be. There's going to be somebody who's very excited, and there's going to be somebody who's not. And, you know, we just need to get as much of the excitement as possible by putting as many things out as possible, make sure it can reach as wide a range of distributed, I should say, as widely as possible. And, you know, we're still going to get the "this is ruining my childhood," but hopefully we'll get a whole lot of "this is awesome, I can't wait."
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it's knock wood. We're on the right path. It's just very slow to change the direction of a large boat.
It's true. It's great things take great time, I like to say, because, you know, you never know. You just truly never know what's going to be with it and who your audience is going to be, who you're going to affect and whatnot. Also, with that example, though, it kind of sounds like, well, you get old, you get crabby. But
yeah, well, you know,
fair enough.
That too. But, I mean, mostly I'm thinking to myself as I just really badly mixed a metaphor there. Path to boat. And I mean, just like, okay, well, the boat's on a path. It's fine. It has wheels. It's a
Trojan
land
thing.
Boat.
It's just weird.
It's a land boat, yeah.
It's a bloat.
Amphibious. Yes, it's an amphibious vehicle.
It's the duck from Branson.
That's what it is. But yeah, no. So as I said, I'm very hopeful about the future of just entertainment in general. There's stuff for everybody, and it's getting everywhere. Like you said, Disney Plus, when it works, will reach a lot of people.
Oh, the shade.
Mm-hmm. And well, no, I'm just seeing a lot of I'm seeing two streams. I'm like seeing one group of people like I can't connect to anything, and another group of people I've just watched The Mandalorian 5 times. You know, so I mean, it's
yeah.
Things technology.
It's true. Oh, it's true. But you never know what can happen from that either. And there's so many, like, that's another tangent of, like, the Jessica Jones season and my sister calling a guy named Kyle, who we still talk about, this guy who's like, yeah, I'm sick. So if you call Netflix support, this was years ago, like season one of Jessica Jones, we're waiting for the premiere to drop on midnight, and you never know what can happen from mistakes or bad things with your fandom, because we remember Kyle being, we called this guy, and he's the support center. He's like, yeah, you know, it's all going, like, there's so many people watching right now. This is years ago, folks. And there's everyone's trying to wait. We're getting so many calls about it. And he honestly said this to us, and we had him on speaker. He's like, yeah, I'm here. I'm sitting here with a joint waiting for it, too, and I can't seem to get the damn show either. And I want to sit here and smoke and watch Jessica Jones in the support room. And I'm like, that is amazing.
Oh, yeah. No, Jessica Jones and Luke Cage both crashed Netflix. I remember that.
Yeah. It was nuts.
And it was not across the board. It was in localized places because I watched them without issue here in the sticks. So, you know, but yeah, no, these are the things that comes up. But, you know, we're all impatient. We all want the stuff now. And, you know, what are you going to do?
It's true. Well, man, we are coming into the show here. We got really deep, I got to say. Yeah. We really did a fandom there. Like, awesome, because it's stuff that needs to be talked about. I tell people a little bit all the time, but it's nice to be able to have someone like-minded on the show.
Sure. Well, it's a fun time, yeah.
Eric, thank you, man, for coming on the show. Before I let you go, obviously, I want to promote your work and what you got to the people, hundreds of thousands of people listening.
All right.
What you got?
What do I got? Okay, so right now, you can order from comic shops in January. I've got two number one issues coming out, Ghostbusters Year One number one, which is going to be focusing on Winston's first bust. We talked about that. I've also got the Red Sonja and the Age of Chaos. So, ooh. Red Sonja meeting the old Chaos characters, you know, the evil Ernie and so on. That's that's number one issue as well, coming from Dynamite, both in January. So I'm excited about those. And then I am helping out on doing the dialogue. It's like a Marvel-style thing. The artist is plotting and drawing and then sending me the pages with some notes, and I have to figure it out. This is an interesting way to work. I took over midstream of the Chastity miniseries from Dynamite, so I'm issue 3 should be coming out pretty quick, and then I'm doing the dialogue on 4 and 5 as well. So those are the three things that I'm working on right now, and hopefully I will have more news soon. But that's what I know, and that's what I can say, and that's what's coming up.
Still amazing. You're like, this is what I'm working on. Plops out the writing dick. Hello.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's been fun. Like I said, it's keeping me busy, and that is ultimately what I want.
Oh, amen to that, man. Amen to that. This is what we talked about. Now, where can people find you at on social media?
Social media. Well, I am at Eric Burnham on Twitter, and ERIKBURNHAM, Eric Burnham. Yeah. That's the easiest place to find me. I mean, you know, from there, my name is for the most part where you can find me. Mm-hmm. Instagram, it's at Eric Burnham, and so on. My webpage isn't that, but that's only because my name wasn't available when I registered my webpage, but Twitter will lead it all back. Twitter can go everywhere. And then, of course, my Patreon, where I'm doing the prose thing that I talked about, which is patreon.com/Eric Burnham. My name leads everywhere. It's awesome.
Sweet. I love it. Folks at home listening right now, guys, go check them out. Give them a follow and such. If you want to follow me, at DakotaMorgan3 on Twitter or at Dakota_Morgan97 on Instagram, where I've been posting a lot of stuff for my books recently. Definitely, man. Thanks for coming on the show. Any final words to some people out there listening?
No, you know what? I just appreciate you having me on the show. I thank everybody for listening through all my babbling and, spurious trains of thought and circular logic. You know, I appreciate the patience, so thank you all for that, and thank you for keeping me employed.
Yes, that is the biggest part. Thanks for allowing food on the table for Eric.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty, everyone. I've been Dakota, and this has been Eric. Stay classy, Ghostbusters.